Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear, listen.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fan that is itself a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Oh! And just who do you think you're talking to? You are in the presence of the Beal, the Indul. The case to make the champion Whittington Esquire, sports entertainment legend. As long as I'm wearing this belt, I cannot, will not be satisfied by any title less than the one I've earned at SummerSlam. I am, and always will be, champion.
So how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good day for podcast. So yeah, what happens in this chapter?
that's your job. Can't just cut a promo and run.
I thought I could skip it this week because Somber skipped writing a chapter last week. literally nothing happened. Literally nothing. The only development was that we found out that Somber's retconned the canon. To have it that Lacuna is directly responsible for the goddess being a villain, for everything bad about the goddess is directly Lacuna is directly responsible, and yep. Furthermore, it is 100% Lacuna's fault that Blackjack is connected to the Wi-Fi,
yes,
and thus becoming increasingly more enslaved by the goddess. Plot point that will have that might have some tension for like. People whose only experience with this shit is Somber's work, but anybody who's read the original story knows that it's a wet fart waiting to happen because the goddess is soon to die.
Yes, she is soon to croak. So there's literally no way that this could possibly have any impact on anything. So, you know, that's always a fun...
But if that knowledge weren't present, that this would surely be very tense. That, like... our heroine is losing more and more control over herself, and will soon be a psychic garbage dump, much like Lacuna, because she's being muted. Like just her nervous system she gets to have an Alicorn nervous system and none of the other benefits.
She doesn't get any of the cool powers. She just gets the mind control.
We didn't even resolve the whole stupid. Who inherits the society? But it doesn't matter because we firmly put our feet down and decided that the entire thing's been upended. Rampage and 21 have done some training montages, some Seven Samurai style. Take this long stick with a pointy end and put the pointy end in the other guy. And built a rather large and impressive guillotine, and it's no longer a problem.
Beheaded all of the society and saved the day. Sadly, that didn't actually happen, and we actually have to figure out which one of these fucking brats gets the crown. But something that got lost, like literally, so I have to make an apology to folks for last week. There was a lost about 30 seconds of audio last week, and it wasn't that big of a deal. Except for we missed a very crucial detail about something that Somber is ridiculous about. So last chapter was also when they talked about like the fact that like Glory had sex with Splendid despite being a hard lesbian. And the explanation behind that is that because like these apparently anatomically correct horses are going through estrus, which is just a heat cycle, meaning that they are apparently, according to Sombra's understanding of estrus, are incapable of not having sex with dudes. Estrus makes you straight, biotruths and all that.
Which fundamentally points to a belief in the author that, like, lesbians aren't real.
Yes. That they're just pretending. There is no such thing as a truly queer person. Which a good pal of ours also pointed out to me the fact that also, like, there are, like, known instances of gay horses. So, like, this isn't even true of horses. Specifically. So this entire plot... Yeah. Well, that's biotruths for you in general, though. Generally speaking, like, biotruth is kind of a term that gets used a lot to describe, like, the very, like, conservative evangelical right people who use, like, biological truths to prove that, like, you know, the only way to, like, be a person is to have, like, you know, to be, like, whatever your gender is confirmed as, and also... or whatever your gender is assigned as, and also the only relationship is a man and a woman because biology says so, but then, like, always ignore all of the evidence contrawise to that concept, but, you know, whatever. Fun fact of the day, there's tons of species out there that fuck indiscriminately, like bonobos, so, you know, to that whole idea. But yeah, that was basically the whole chapter, though, was... Oh, like, Lancer shows up as well, and BJ beats him off with the power of boners. Because, I guess, because she's, like, incapacitated by a stun grenade, but she still manages to seduce Lancer, and it's pretty heavily implied that it was done so through, like, estrus pheromones, which...
Genital stank.
I don't know if that works on zebras, because zebras are not technically horses, but whatever.
That sex stank, too strong.
So,
also,
sure.
Those organs are intact?
Yes. It makes... Okay, no. It constantly reminds me that BJ is mostly a robot, but she has fully functioning sex organs still. So, BJ is basically a real doll at this point.
She's so alpha that, like, every cell in her body riddled with cancer, but not the pussy.
Pussy game too strong. Kinda hate it. Man, you can really tell this is written by a straight man. Fuck, I guess we have to do this chapter too. Strap yourself in for even more nothing.
No!
Yeah,
get
I told you.
Get on the gyrocopter and leave! Why can't you just get on the gyrocopter you came here for and leave?
God. So,
shoot them all! Get on the copter and go!
You're civilized, though. You can't shoot civilized folk. That would be barbaric. Fuck. So, chapter 57. Best night ever. Oh, I hate this chapter.
This is foreboding. I don't like that title.
No, I don't like it either. It is very foreboding. It's filled with forebode. I called this the Grand Galloping Gala episode because that's what they're doing. They're having a big old party, which is very reminiscent to the finale of the first season of MLP Friendship is Magic. The allusions to it are very clear and obvious. Boy, a lot of this chapter is dedicated to them getting ready for this party. So they're in dressing rooms getting all ready, and BJ is conversing with Hoity Toity, who's kind of become like her like butler because he was the butler to King Awesome more or less. He's trying to figure out what her plan is, like what she's going to do about the throne, and he kind of like rattles off a couple of them that wouldn't work. Because, like, it immediately tries to do the whole, like, well, you can't just do that thing where, like, you give them all the crown. That won't work. They'll just kill each other for it. So you have to make a choice. It very much feels like it's shooting down theories that were happening from last chapter about what's going to happen next. So BJ, like, has some additional plans that she needs to, like, set up to get ready for this inevitable, like, Kingmaker scheme. So she goes and talks to Deus, and she's like, well, since you're a giant tank, we can't bring you with you into the sky, so, like, can you do me a favor and, like, watch over this place? Because I have a bad feeling that whoever I pick as regent is going to get killed by the other two. So, like, if they do that, shoot the society, basically. Because I guess Deus just listens to her now. Additionally...
Fuck it! I name the mentally handicapped rape-mobile!
Just name
Behold Deus. Your new king!
Fucking... she also... Her second part of her plan is, like... So, like, the, you know, the society has a big old bodyguard to the king, who's a minotaur named Pain Train. He showed up in a previous chapter, and BJ kicked his ass. She's like, all right, I want you to help as well. And they, like, converse, and they make buddy-buddy over, like, the, like, basically being cops. Like, they cop bond. But he also elaborates on us on another detail of the story we didn't need to really go over, but, like, because, like, minotaurs are all connected to the earth, and the earth of the hoof is really sick, and all the stones are dead, and BJ's all puzzled by that. But it's just to establish that, like, even though, like, radiation and taint, which is a biovirus, are, you know, exist, enervation is so much scarier and nastier than that, you guys. It's just more propping up the setting as being more, like, more significant than its original, for basically no reason.
Well, not no reason.
Yes. No, I know.
No, it's the good one reason.
Up. Yeah, no good reason. Splendid. Like, BJ and Grace have a conversation, because I guess they're on friendly terms now because Grace flirted with her. But, like, okay, he's like, well, what's up with Splendid? He's feeling all, he's acting like, he's all acting all uppity and smug. And she's, and BJ, because she's very blunt about this, is just like, well, yeah, because he fucked Glory. And, like, my favorite reveal of this is because Splendid fucked Glory because she looks like Rainbow Dash, because he has a Rainbow Dash fetish, and apparently his room is covered in, like, Rainbow Dash memorabilia, which is super creepy and definitely doesn't come across as suave as I think Sombra means it to.
Yeah, that's fucked. The closest thing I can think of in, like, a modern human context is, like, a dude who is just a really intense, inexplicable Amelia Earhart stan. For extremely complicated reasons, one of our protagonists has taken on the complete likeness of Amelia Earhart.
But, like, not by intention, by accident.
Yeah.
She got infected by some poison oak and it turned her into Amelia Earhart.
Honestly, that does, in that context, make it even weirder. Like, in any other story, like the sound of a spider, like, tripping on the strings of a violin would, like, start, like, playing as, like, we zoom in on Glory's eyes as she looks around the room, and, like, a very, like, no, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy kind of
moment. It's like a murder basement where, like, all of the, like, yeah, all the creepy memorabilia is all on strings connected to the walls and stuff.
But this is supposed to make him look like a cool guy, huh?
Yeah, okay. It's real weird. But yeah, they're all real weird and awkward about it. We get a lot of this chapter is dedicated to talking about how everybody looks really pretty in a dress. And it goes to a lot of exhaustive detail to describe a whole bunch of characters' dresses.
Jesus Christ!
So the thing is, this would be fun in, like, any other story, but we are on multiple doomsday clocks at this point. We are in book 4 of 5. We are deep into book 4.
Yeah?
We don't have time for this.
You guys were on an urgent mission to get a gyrocopter. And also, this is all happening in the context of on the backs of slaves.
Yes. Which the story is completely forgotten about, by the way.
Oh, boy!
I just I'll get into it a little bit later.
This is so amazing. This is we've returned to like this entire chapter, this entire like arc, I guess. This baffling mini arc has been like a massive return to form from the early days. I'm frankly kind of nostalgic. Like I'm sort of grooving on this because we're back to like incredible bizarro satire. Like we're on like what if Jonathan Swift was 100% serious with a modest proposal.
Yeah, it's well this is late tier Project Horizons. Project Horizons is so hyperbolic and insane that if it was any other writer, this would be like a weird, fiendishly clever self-parody. But it's not. This is all super serious. But yeah, we get a lot of description of people's dresses. The thing I wanted to complain about, just to take 2 seconds to complain about, for like is two primary things. First of all, I really, really don't cotton to the fact that Somber thinks that Blackjack should be like stereotypically attractive. Like I talked about this before, but like in my mind, like Blackjack is like hard butch. Like she rocks a mullet. She wears plaid. She is, you know, super, super non-effeminate in my mind, just because the way she acts and talks, especially in the early stuff. She's a hard drinking, hard smoking, crazy redneck, and like even ignoring like all the other bad mischaracterization of her being a cop and shit like that. Just like the weirdness of like, oh, also she's really attractive in a very very conventional way is just such a like, you know, weird het thing to write, and I don't like it. It just sticks out really weird to me. Like, you know, she's supposed to be like half blown up and covered in scars, but apparently she can still like make a dress look feminine and, you know, get her hair all gussied up and stuff.
Yeah, how would she, like, based on everything about her, she wouldn't have any context for like how to go about that?
Well, someone does it for her, obviously, because this is the like,
yeah, she has
it's the princess wish fulfillment fantasy episode where like the like disheveled main character gets to look like a pretty girl for like an hour before, you know, the stroke of midnight happens and all the magic goes away. It's supposed to be that, but it doesn't work. But the other thing I wanted to complain about is Somber's choice of color scheme is maddening to me.
It's frequently funny when authors do this, a lot of writers have like a really bad sense of fashion. Those that don't go out of the way to like find visual references to like just describe, but like Somber being in all other ways a hack, like it is inevitable that this is.
Yeah, it really stuck out for me. So it's important to remember, like, because it's been what, a year since we started doing this. By the way, this is our fucking anniversary episode. This episode is super fitting for that. By the way, this entire episode is a nostalgia trip, so it does work very well. Just for context, Blackjack is a all white, an all white coated horse with black and red striped mane and red eyes. Just keep that into context. Keep that in your mind. Like, store that in your mind pockets. On top of that, she is also covered in a lot of metal because she's a cyborg now. She used to be painted all white and like enamel white because that was the old armor. But now that she has Enclave power armor on her limbs, they're now just all jet black.
Oh, and insectile.
And insectile. So she looks super rad. Don't get me wrong. Like, this is super a thing I like drawing. By the way, people that don't know, I'm an artist and I draw a lot of shit, and I've drawn Blackjack before. I like Blackjack's aesthetics. So this is something that I care a lot about. Somber decides to wrap her in a dress dark to light purple with a white accent tracery. the fucking, like, bottom of the world fell out for me trying to imagine this. Like, this might not be something that just, this might not be something that doesn't translate super well in audio, and I feel like I'm gonna have to draw this just to kind of show off, like, my problems with it, but, like, black, like, BJ has a very, for the most part, super monochromatic color scheme with a lot of red. Throwing purple onto that does not work.
You know, it just occurred to me, yeah, like the black a black dress on a like alabaster white skin already kind of a mess.
But it's not black; like, it's purple.
I thought it was okay. So it's purple with white accents.
Yes.
And her hilarious insect forelimbs sticking through the sleeves, pretty great. On its own, they would have to like it would be sort of assumed that much like a Victorian lady, she would be like sewn into this costume, and like it would be more necessary than ever because she is not shaped like anybody that would otherwise be this would be fitted for because of like all the bulky. Insectile armor that are her limbs.
Yes, physically her legs. It's something that really, really struck to me. It's just purple and white works, but the problem is that purple on a white and then black and red as your hair choice as your accents does not work. It's super bad. It makes the purple look really like kind of washy. Like it doesn't, you either need color harmony or something different. So you either want like green or orange. In this case, purple is just the worst one to go for. And again, this isn't a visual media, so we should probably stop talking about it. But like, it's just something that struck out to me super bad that like, this is just, but you're right. Like this is a thing that it just happens a lot with authors that they just like, they don't think out how something looks, and that's just, it's just another, this is kind of one of those like Fies writing corner things of like something to look out for when you're designing outfits for characters and something is that like I strongly recommend like getting references. Like you should get references in general for a lot of your things just to be able to like visualize your writing, but when it comes to outfits, like outfits stick out to me like a sore thumb if they look really bad. And this is one that really struck me. The only one that beats this is Rampage. But Rampage's isn't bad. I kind of love it. But I wish that the story didn't try to lampshade it so hard. Because, of course, you know, Rampage comes out. And because of, like, the, like, rules of comedy, she's, like, in a really, like, flowy white dress. And because, you know, they basically just held her down and, like, scrubbed her and threw her in a dress. It's like, ha ha ha, the Reaper in a funny dress. But, like, you could, like, that, like, because it spends so much time talking about how weird it is, it really kind of kills the joke of, hey, it's Rampage in a silly dress that she wouldn't normally wear. And it also tries to do that thing where it's like, well, it's an all-white dress, and in some cultures, white means is the color of death instead of black. And it's just kind of like, I guess, but it is.
The dumbest thing about Somber's take on Rampage is how much of a tryhard
that she is.
Yeah, like the which yeah
that she like cares about her image at all.
That she would be offended. Like he keeps forgetting that she is ancient.
Yes, that she is 200 years old, and at one point was just a urban legend for a while. Like she was a cryptid for a while.
But because like. Sombra is fundamentally uncool. Is probably one of the one of the most uncool guys ever. He therefore doesn't have a frame of reference for like what a cool guy would say and do, and so his best approximation is what a poser would say and do. What a really needy, attention starved poser how they would respond to a situation, and so. Yeah, no, I guess that it makes sense that his version of Rampage would... well, you know, some cultures, white is the color of death. they say, fidgeting in a pretty dress.
Yeah.
Instead of like picking out the prettiest dress, waiting patiently as they put it on her, and then like ripping the sleeves off.
I think it would also just be equally as funny for just like Rampage to just effortlessly be able to just be like, I'm just going to wear a pretty dress. Fuck you.
Yeah, it's pretty dress day.
But yeah, I think partly I'm only spending so much time on this too because there just super isn't much to say about this chapter. Oh man, there's a super gross scene with 21 that I'm not excited about. Because like they round the corner and everyone's in pretty dresses and they like meet up with the boys and like it spends a lot of time talking about how BJ thinks 21 looks in a suit and tux. Because we're setting up for that relationship now really, really hard. And he's all like suave and sophisticated feeling, which is really gross. And I'll get to that in a bit to explain why. But first...
Well, not the least of which is that he should be conducting a... Like, in the middle of the grand revolution right now. It should be.
Yeah. He penciled in the party. He's got to... After this, it's the decapitations.
Well, like, slightly nervous because, like, this is, like, all right, it's stage 5.
Yeah.
Just gotta, like, not sweat too hard before before all of these motherfuckers die.
But yeah, then they go to a big boring-ass party that's super, super bloated. Basically, to like, quick run down this big party, because the whole party is just centered around, like, Blackjack goes up, gives a small speech, and then she's gonna eventually just, like, name her regent. And then they're just going to call it a day and then leave, is the plan. But, like, all of the faction heads are here, basically. Like, all the faction... Not faction heads, sorry. That's a misnomer. But representatives of all the factions show up here for this party, because apparently that's just a thing that they do every year anyways. So they just happen to be here while BJ is doing this thing. And it feels like a weird nostalgia bender. Because it's going through, like, every person we've met and had, like, some sort of connection with and kind of getting their say on it, which really feels like this is, like, the finale of the series.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, by faction heads, you don't mean, like, sub-factions within the fucking society. You mean, like, fucking...
Bottle Cap.
Horse Bronson is here.
Yes. So Horse Bronson is here. Cash Money is here. The Zodiacs are here. Except for Professor Zodiac, coincidentally, because
who remains in a tube.
Yes, we find out that Crunchy Carrots is still alive. The former leader of the Rangers, and she's shacked up with the Trottenham Rangers, which are the super British ones. Star Paladin, Sugar Apple Bomb Stronghoof is here, who's just an anime character who flexes out of his armor. But yeah, everybody is here. It's the playset with everybody here.
Fuck me, Des.
Sorry?
Fuck me, Des. Fuck me, Desu.
But yeah, we just kind of learn a little bit of what's been going on with everybody.
Pleased to be fucking me.
Like, we find out that, like, apparently, like... So apparently Paradise has been closed down. Because the, like, little gang of friends that BJ had with Hightower teamed up, became their own adventuring party, and took out the slavers that BJ never dealt with.
Great.
The Zodiacs have replenished their, like, ranks, so they have all their dumb specialized anime losers again. Charity is there, because she's where a lot of people got their dresses from, so they all owe her stuff. We find out a plot point that does not matter. That Charity is, of course, one of Finders Keepers' daughters. So she's one of the. So the kid making jokes about how she was eventually going to take over the Waste through the power of trade because she was so greedy and good at it. That she also has, like, the blood claim to do that over the key the
through the power of nepotistic inheritance. This is the best libertarian meritocracy, of course.
It's just the chorus.
Of course.
But also the fact that, like, capitalism is inherited through the blood. Like, she has never met any of her other sisters, like her other three sisters up to this point, or I guess half sisters, up to this point. And just the fact that, like, Blackjack is like, well, you two seem alike. And they're just like, yeah, that's probably the case. And they don't think anything of it. It's fucking ridiculous to me.
Amazing.
Well, especially because the only arc Charity has ever had has been the fact that she's jealous of Scotch Tape for having a father, when she now knows pretty likely who her goddamn father is, but that plot point doesn't matter anymore. We also find out that 99 has survivors, which completely invalidates the whole, like point of that whole genocide thing, that whole sin of Blackjack thing, of destroying 99. It turns out there were people that just, like, I guess sealed themselves in rooms that didn't have air ducts, which, you know, brings the question of how did they breathe for the last couple of days / months?
I beg your fucking pardon.
Well, if you remember, like for those playing at home, Stable 99, the BJ killed Stable 99 using a modified air talisman that converted all of the air in the filtration system into chlorine gas, and apparently there were survivors of that, which doesn't make any sense, and the half-hearted explanation is they basically, like, sealed themselves in rooms that didn't have the air filtration system, which, like, they're in a bunker that's, like, a kilometer under the earth. Where are they getting air from?
You have to move on. You have to just say the next thing that happens. I can't.
Okay.
You can't
even grok it? Okay. Zebras are apparently in the area wrecking everything because zebras have become the other new raiders in the story. They're just, like, wrecking shit, especially in the Northwest, which are fucking over the,
Father, is that you?
God. Okay.
I'm coming!
Someone pointed this out, to me when I was talking about the fact that, like, zebras have that really specific kind of yellow scare racism to them about, like, how they're all, like, super organized, but they're just, like, a faceless mass that we never really interact with in this story. Like, they're just the Mongol horde. Like, they're just the Golden Horde sweeping over everything, like a plague. But they're also, like, super organized and, like, militarized and cannot be, like, reasoned with or backed down. Someone put a good point. It's the China is so brilliant, but also evil, sort of stereotype.
I've actually heard the exact phrasing fairly recently when I listened to an audiobook version of a Dr. Fu Manchu story of that, like, the brilliant but congenitally malevolent Chinese.
Yes.
They'd
be our equals if they weren't so evil. Yeah, it's very, very reminiscent of that.
I'd be more interested, impressed, affected if, like, we didn't have replacement putty patrollers before.
Yes.
These are
just, like, the double replacements.
Like, the now that the Harbingers have been, like, gutted, like, I don't know.
They actually got gutted way faster than I thought they did. Like, I thought that they were, like, this sort of big threat for the rest of the series, and I forgot that, like, they're just utterly replaced by zebras, like, a handful of chapters into the next book.
You can't impress me. You can't hold my attention with the shit anymore, Somber. Like, it just...
I'm just letting you know that, like, as this is all happening, zebras are just messing stuff up. But we won't deal with that because we're flying into the sky in the next chapter anyways. Because, you know, they're going to come back to it all being really, really bad for the fifth book.
Is there, as long as, like, Horace Bronson is here and, like, again, it bears pointing out that this is, like, his, like, job?
Yeah.
Does he have anything to say about his failure to, like that if the Reapers have reconstituted, what the fuck are they doing about this?
They're mostly hoping that they need, like, super Scottish Highlanders can help them, more
fucking
or less.
Fucking losers.
Yeah, basically. Because the Highlanders really hate the Zebras, for some reason, because they've always been at war with them.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Because they're...
That's pretty hand-tippy there.
Yeah. Well, they're all... Because, the Highlanders are all, like, the backwoods... They're, like, weird backwards yokels, but they're also very clearly Scottish. I mean, they're called Highlanders, for fuck's sakes. Like, they're very clear with their, like, deliberate, like...
White-coated.
Yes, I know. I am familiar with the coating. But, yeah, they are white-coated, and zebras are, like... weirdly like normally they're African coded and they kind of still are in this setting, but also like Somber super doubles down on the Chinese thing as well. The Chinese like yellow scare, it's the yellow scare, it's the red scare, the jungle scare. I don't know what like the Africa scare,
they're just is. Non-white, they're Persian, they're
the army of immigrants coming out of the sea. Fuck, I hate this. Lacuna and Stronghoof dance, I guess, because it was established before that Stronghoof has a weird crush on Lacuna, and Lacuna, I guess, sort of reciprocates, I guess, so they just have, like, a fun dance, I guess, in the background, and, to exit relevance from the story. Fuck, I forgot about this shit. Fucking, luckily, for some stupid goddamn reason, there's a Dashite at the party. And a Dashite, to clue people in again, is the people who reject the Enclave's, like, society are exiled and branded as Dashites. They're chemically burned over the cutie marks with the symbol of Rainbow Dash to mark them as traitors to the Enclave, so that they can be killed on sight if an Enclave ever finds them again. But that doesn't matter in this context anyways. But she talks to a Dashite who has one of the most unfortunate names of Stormfront. The context of it, to keep in mind that the context of it is that Dashites are, like, very strictly Antifa. So it would be like meeting an Antifa guy named John Hitler. Like, it's super weird. Hello, my name is Stalin. Pleased to meet you.
Oh, no, like, an Antifa guy whose handle is Stormfront. It's just a little more like... hello. I am a member of Iron Front here in Deutschland. My name is Hans Hitler.
That's what I was saying, like John Hitler. That's yeah. My name. Like, I don't know. Like, it just comes across really funny. I don't think Somber really considered the implication. But anyways, he doesn't really exist to be a person. He's just a plot point.
Yeah.
He's just there to explain that, like, Lighthooves is doing some shady shit. Because he, like, because conveniently this Dashite is, he used to work for Secret Intelligence, basically. Like, he was part of, like, the people who had black bag people. The same thing that Lighthooves worked for. And he's just like, yeah, they're doing some shady shit, and... He explains a bunch of really complicated shit about the politics of the setting that is bad and stupid and is really focused to make it seem like the Enclave isn't bad, it just has bad leaders. Because, like, we've heard this a million times, but it's just important to note that in this very special anniversary episode of this show that the case it makes for it is that Navarro, which is the military, like the heavily militarized city-state, is putting the boots on all of the other of the Enclave, and that Thunderhead is resistant to that. But because of the way that Somber frames this, because he's a moron, is that Thunderhead is just making a really, like, democratic power play and not really making it. Like, they're basically just, like, establishing Dems. Like, they're just they don't actually care about, like, helping people. They're just opposition. To Navarro, like to Navarro's more stringent conservatism. But Somber is a moron and considers this to be like actual opposition, like actual radical change, when it simply just isn't, because it posits Thunderhead as being a good guy, except for the fact really important detail that I think you forgot about this Somber, but Lighthoof's plan is to shoot missiles from Thunderhead to Nevarro because you want to have a nuclear deterrent to stop them from putting the boots on Thunderhead. That's not a revolution. That's a change in management, you moron. Those aren't the same things. Fuck. Hitting myself in the face with a pen. Then it's time to go actually collect the goddamn royal brats to crown which one it's going to be. Princess Charm hands her a bag of crushed memory orbs because she figured out that, like, BJ had no plan for electing Princess Charm, which, given that she's a fucking unrepentant sociopath, I guess that's a one-up on her. But fucking Christ. So BJ explains her plan to the brats, though, that her plan is that she's going to name her regent, and the other two have to swear an oath of fealty to that regent, and that'll be enforced by Deus and Pain Train, the Minotaur, that if that regent is killed, the other two will be immediately killed for doing so, because it'll be presumed that they had them assassinated. And her logic behind this is where it gets pretty, pretty disgusting, though. So BJ's logic is that all of them bring unique visions to the table to how to make the society function.
Team of rivals, eh?
And I would like to point out two problems with this. First of all of them are unrepentant sociopaths. Splendid literally wanted to put bomb collars on children, despite the fact that the story keeps saying that he's a real good guy. Grace wants minimal reform, and Charm would just kill everybody she could. And it's important to remember, all three of these people are not opposed to using slave labor. Not a single one of these people has any interest in releasing the slaves, even a little bit. Even Grace, the one that's posited as being the good one, has no interest in doing that. But that was why I wanted to come back to this, though. This slavery plot point is completely dropped because Somber just decided that, like, well, no, like the those that,
they've made,
like,
their case. They're right. Like, that's it's just how it works here.
That limp-dicked argument, argumentation about how, well, they're technically called serf, convinced everyone, even 21, to step out of our, like, to step out of our, like, revision time machine, like a revision bubble, like 21. Apparently doesn't care anymore. Or if so, he's completely forgotten to voice it. And Rampage also doesn't give a shit either. And, like, you know, Gloria's already a Nazi, so who gives a shit about her? That plot point is completely dropped, which is, like, really disgusting. Like, fuck you. Fucking asshole. Goddamn. But yeah, it doesn't really... This was kind of the, like, always going to be... It was always going to be some variation of, like, centrist, why can't everybody be king bullshit. We don't need to get rid of dictators. We just need equal opportunity dictators. BJ does a ceremonial splitting of the crown. She breaks it into four pieces. Takes one of herself for herself. At the faith that if something ever arises, she'll come back and kill the people in society that are bad.
As guarantor. I mean, actually, like, that's not bad, that specific thing. Like, if you're gonna maintain a monarchic system and your premise is that, like, I've chosen this person and I've put people in place loyal to me who will retaliate against the surviving heirs if anything happens to my chosen candidate, it does make sense that, like, the way that she's framed it, she is still fundamentally, like,
she is regent, queen,
and she's
she's still Queen Blackjack, first of her name. Like, yeah,
she is technically no longer the leader, but, like, the guarantor of whoever remains to lead. So that's the first thing in this entire chapter. It is completely stupid.
Yeah, I just want every single one of these people killed, including Blackjack. So like.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's. I mean, it's fucked up that like the system is being maintained and
yes.
She's playing along with this at all. But
yes.
As long as she is, that's not a bad symbolic act.
She is innately a cop, so it makes sense. Oh yeah, Charm storms out and throws a bitch fit, so she's exiled for doing so. Which is only just so she'll come back up as a later plot point as a villain. Grace is named regent. She has a little speech that doesn't mean anything, and I didn't care to look it up. But yeah, that's not the end of the chapter. I just realized the way I framed that, it sounds like it's the end of the chapter. But that's the end of this plot point. Yay, a character we don't care about was named queen of a society that we want burned to the ground. Huzzah. Democracy remains intact.
Just when I start, just when I give Blackjack a compliment, she immediately turns around and instantly makes an incredibly stupid mistake. No, like you've already broken your promise. Essentially, like the one of these three is spat on your generous offer.
Part of the deal was if you don't agree with me, you're exiled. So that was the plan. She actually, so in a weird twist of fate, she actually lived up to the promise she made for once, that she was gonna like, no, I'm gonna exile you if you don't listen to me, and then, oopsie doopsie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it fits in her like, I'm not an I am arbitrarily not an executioner, so she of course wouldn't do the practical reasonable thing, which is you will be exiled to hell. You will be sentenced to spend the remainder of your days in the pits of hell.
In the turmoil pits.
You will be sent there by way of 0.50 express.
One plot point that I forgot to before we get to the conclusion that I forgot to elucidate on is also Steel Reign of the Harbingers, former literal human gun. Now turned bitch boy for the Harbingers. Steel Reign shows up and he's all like weird and tries to be like a James Bond villain for some reason. The thing that just always really sticks out to me about him is that like he's like a pretty boy anime boy character, which is really silly to me. But it makes special mention of how like ridiculous he looks in comparison to his big armor, because he's just in a suit.
I missed that he'd been taken in by the Harbingers after.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. That was he's now like the commander of the Harbingers outside of like he's like a step below Dawn. He's got like a bomb in him that if he disobeys with Cognitum he'll blow up.
Oh, okay. Why is he allowed then?
Because anyone can just break into the society. It has no security. Apparently,
yeah.
You can just well the security is really bribable is the explanation, which is insane.
I'm blinking real hard.
Yeah. Okay. But he gets arrested, so it's okay.
And then he explodes?
No. He just arrests him and he just like spends the rest of the night in a cell, I guess.
Oh duh. Oh man.
Like I said, this is just a weird nostalgia bender, so we have to see everybody. Like it really does feel like a final send off. It's as if, like, Blackjack at the end of this is just like, I have to return to my home planet. And it's just a cell slid up into the sky. And then died on the way back to her home planet. Oh, we got a couple of whammies still.
Let's gird ourselves.
Yeah, gird your loins. Get ready.
I want to get in a quick joke. If Blackjack were sufficiently Antifa, as we
wish he were,
we would prefer, and, like, yeah. Hope for, pray for. I think the funniest and most interesting and clever way to completely fucking destroy this place would be to give the full regency title to any given field driver. Like I forget the like any given taskmaster out in the field. So the guy whose job it is to walk up and down the rows and like whip anybody who like. Has collapsed with exhaustion or like give it to one of those motherfuckers. And it would be especially appropriate, like even in a version where like it's bitterly satirical and like we keep Blackjack's awful copness, if she made that choice anyway because of solidarity as a fellow cop. Like, oh, you did what my job was more or less back in Stable 99. I think you, the yes. head of the
head of security,
slave drivers, the head of the is now the new regent. Put power in that dude's hands, and then suddenly, you have somebody who is in the position of regent, who is from the management class, from the police caste, who is. Buddies who has like respect and the reflexive authority of the enforcement class.
The
aristocrat class immediately tries to like sabotage and kill this person, which results in a chain reaction of retribution from the people that they need to do the retributing.
Yes,
and the whole thing tears apart.
All right, yeah, we got a couple more whammies. Yeah, because they're all dancing now and having a fun party. Glory and BJ converse about their relationship, in which, oh man, there's a lot of doozies in this, but to try and keep it brief, basically, Glory is torn up by the fact that she fucked a dude. And BJ's okay with that because BJ doesn't care about monogamy, but, you know, Glory does, obviously. And it also tries to tiptoe around the concept that Glory is having weird doubts about her own sexuality because she fucked a dude even though she considers herself gay, and on top of that the bomb gets dropped that Splendid proposed to her and she's considering it as an idea, because of course, you know, Sombre doesn't like Glory at all and wants her to go, so like this is kind of left as a window of like how to politely excuse her from the story depending on audience reaction, I guess. But there's a lot of problems with this. Like, first of all, the whole thing is based off the concept that, like, estrus makes you straight, I guess, for a short amount of time. Like, your biology just makes you boy crazy. And there is also a sentiment that Glory carries that Rainbow Dash's body is what's making her have these feelings. Which is baffling, because RBD in FOE is a confirmed hard lesbian as well, so that doesn't fly, Somber. Yes?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out how to articulate it, but like my understanding, pre-becoming almost completely Nazi, one of the like longest-running jokes in the entire My Little Pony fandom has been posting a picture of Rainbow Dash, and you cannot tell me that this horse is not extremely gay.
Yes, and apparently Somber doesn't agree with that. He thinks that she would still fuck dudes, apparently. You know, like a normal person. I don't know, it's more just queer erasure. There's a lot of queer burying in this chapter because of this stuff. Like, because we're just told an outright lie that, like, their biology is making them straight is, like, really, like, frustrating in of itself. And then Glory is having, in a better written story, a very reasonable freakout. In that she is questioning her sexuality because there's a new wrinkle in her whole situation going on. Even though she considers herself to be hard gay, and it's a hard thing to deal with. The thing I hate about it, though, is that this isn't framed as if it's a person actually struggling with sexuality. It's a person dealing with what is essentially chemical-altering nonsense, making them straight, and that's really disgusting. One of the defenses of this entire scene is just, oh, Glory is bi, she just doesn't know it yet, which is just like a really frustrating take to have about this kind of thing, because it's giving way too much good faith to a really, really bad plot point. Because, you know, it's not, you can't prove what isn't stated. Like, you can't just be like, because there's no implication that that's what's going on. There's just, it's just, if you take it on good faith, that's what's going on. But I don't buy that. I think that's ridiculous. But this is all just sort of really to reinforce the idea that, like, when BJ and 21 eventually hook up, that it's not, like, a big deal because her and Glory's relationship is becoming either open or non-existent, depending on what side you're on. Because on Blackjack's side, She just wants an all open polyamorous relationship that doesn't really have strings attached, except for the specific one of romantic relationships, which is super fair. Gloria, on the other hand, wants a monogamous relationship because she doesn't want to share people because she's not comfortable with that, which is also super fair. But this story does not handle that very well because Zomber doesn't like Glory, and she's an awful character anyways. So it doesn't come across as two responsible adults talking this stuff out. It comes across as two deeply codependent children desperately trying to wiggle their way around getting what they want from their respective partner, which isn't healthy at all. So that's my stance on it, I guess. But then this just gets way grosser and way darker in like 30 seconds. So they're dancing and they like trade partners, and so eventually Blackjack and 21 end up together, and they kind of like have some like, you know, mid-dance flirt banter because 21 is all like suave and sophisticated, which is super dark. And I'll get to that in a second. But BJ like asks him, is like, you know, do you still hate me? And 21's like, well, I don't know what to think about you, but I don't think I hate you anymore, because, you know, apparently he just doesn't care about her raping him anymore, nor killing one of his lovers at all. But why this is really dark to me is because he, like, BJ, like, you know, is like, oh, you know, you're really in your element here, and he's like, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that Stable in 99 taught me how to do, which, like, that hit like hard into hard, like reverse gear. I was like, wait, what? Because so
yeah, that should be like a mood killing, like record screech, like
So it's important to remember, 99 has always been kind of vague. So like to recap, 99, like Stable 99, was a rape factory. It used men as breeding equipment and referred to them as breeding equipment. It dehumanized them to the point they were just considered second class citizens. But it's always been kind of vague about their exact relationships. The way 21 implied it was really heavily a kind of like, you're checked out for the night and you're used as a sex toy, basically. Somewhere between a sex toy and a gigolo, and then you're put back into medical. But the implication that they were also given comprehensive, like, domestic training and etiquette training is actually downright diabolical. Like, that implies a level of sophisticated abuse that is way darker than Somber has ever wrote in anything. Like, this story has multiple rapes in it, and I don't consider that to be as dark as the idea of comprehensive husbandry of half your population into being ultimate sex slaves. That's super fucked up. And it's just said as an offhand joke, because the story doesn't take this even remotely seriously. Even though it goes out of its way to, like, really try to establish that matriarchal societies are bad and, like, oh, men get it so much worse than women. It's very nice guy incel shit in the story. But then it doesn't actually talk about how fucked up this is.
Yeah, that we've entered a whole new universe of Somber is summarizing and misunderstanding some mystery author's work. Like, this is pure, like, old, like, dark comedy satire that's like Somber is somehow misunderstanding. Like, yes. Somber is writing and not, like, understanding what he has just done, because, like, that moment should be like that is a brilliant, heartbreaking, wonderful, artful moment that the author didn't
get
notice or understand. That like that should be the moment that, like, BJ stops dancing. The real cruelty, like the real heartbreaker of that moment would be 21 says it with total sincerity because he's just fallen back on old habits.
Yeah.
And like he does feel comfortable and he doesn't think about it.
Yeah, he doesn't think of it as abuse at all. It's just
and Blackjack like stops dead in the middle of the dance. Because that's terrifying. I now realize that I've put you back into a really dark situation, and you're falling back on behaviors that you were taught when you were like a mandatory, like, subhuman, a gigolo. Like,
yeah, I have put an abuse survivor into a, like, PTSD minefield, basically. Like, I have thrown them into the wolf pit and been like, nah, this is probably fine. Yeah, but, like, that would require a level of self-awareness not only on the character, but on the author that neither of them have. About the ramifications of this. Because then, immediately after this, her, Gloria and 21 all have a threesome together. I wasn't sure how I was going to lead into this, but I think ripping the band-aid off.
Home, if that sound made it onto the recording, it was genuine. Like, that, like, I sometimes make, like, sounds and statements that are sort of, like, have a bit of artifice to them, like, to, like, really sort of sell a, like, kind of comedic response to the horror we're experiencing here on this podcast. But that was sincere. Yeah. I just gasped. My soul left my body. I let out a death rattle just now.
Yes, trying to escape.
Because, like, what we were just talking about, like, oh, he is disassociating and, like, is weirdly comfortable with, like, he's back home again, and he's so close to it, like, he is so stuck back in his old habits, he can't even, like, see the hurt yet, like, he doesn't feel it yet, but come tomorrow morning, he's gonna be in a fucking wreck. And what do his friends do to him?
They all get drunk and have a threesome.
They Blackjack, like, exploits the final, like, line of code in this.
Yeah, it's super important to remember that Blackjack, at least in this situation, has a significant position of power over 21, and it's super not okay that she does this. Whatever, they're all blackout drunk, so it's all okay, I guess.
And use it, like, performing a sex act with him is literally the worst conceivable thing
to do. it's gonna get worse in a second.
No.
So that happens, and BJ's all like, you know, it's all cool. I guess we all worked it out in the end through the power of boners. But, like, the line, like, she, you know, she looks over and she sees 21 as she's getting up from the bed. And there's a line that I had quoted because I wanted to come back to this. Because this line is so fucking dark. Flushing far more than I ever had after coitus, I pulled myself free from them. P20's eyes opened a little, his lips curled in a slight inebriated smile. Time to go, he muttered sluggishly. Don't call medical. They'll think I did a bad job. That is so fucking dark. Like, that's so grim. Like, the idea that, like in a drunken, inebriated state, his immediate, like, his, like, half state is just immediately assuming he's just back in 99, is so fucking dark that, like, this line of dialogue has been stuck in my brain for 5 years. This exchange, because Blackjack doesn't see anything wrong with it, because, you know, as far as Blackjack's concerned, like, it's all monogamous. It's all polyamorous consensual, because Somber doesn't understand, like, the first thing about relationships, especially polyamorous ones. Like, we'll get into it in a couple of chapters about this, but, like, effectively, like, Glory and BJ's relationship is now over because of this, for very stupid reasons that Somber doesn't understand, like, don't make any sense. But I just really wanted to zoom in on, like, how dark and uncomfortable that scene makes me, like, just how, like, I don't use the term squick often, but I was deeply squicked out by the, like, experience of, like, oh, you don't get why this is bad, Somber. You don't get why this is bad at all.
How could he? It's so amazing that he doesn't. Like, it really, like, the most mind-blowing thing here is that, like, he doesn't, like, that he would write all of that? that he would write that phrase in this context, and he doesn't see it.
This is why there is a secret theory about the fact that this story is actually secretly good. Because shit like this, there's no one can be this dumb. Like, no one can be this lacking in self-awareness. Like, no one can be this solipsistic, this like devoid of rational thinking, this alien, and like write a story. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It defies logic. Like, this has to be a joke. Please let this be a joke. But yeah, fuck, man.
It can't even be like like, that's too dark. It is like that's so dark. That's so bad.
Yes.
That's like again, like, in if this had been written by anybody else, like, I would fully anticipate this was the last chapter, because it ends with like we cut like whatever else happens, and then eventually we're like a day later. 21 is like sniffling and refuses to like look at BJ. Is distraught. BJ is indifferent to it. And then 21 presses a button and Blackjack fucking explodes.
just dies. Instead, what happens? Because we're at the end of the chapter now. Instead, what happens? She takes a good long look at herself in the mirror, and she's like, "Today was a pretty good day." And then the goddess is like, "Ha, I need you now," and just like turns off BJ's volition. And it's like, okay, you're now completely under my control now, because I've had enough time to wriggle into your brain. And the last scene is if I cared at all, there is a sort of nightmare in the fact that like BJ is like calmly trots around the room getting herself ready, all the time inside of her head screaming because she's desperately trying to like alert her friends that something's wrong, but like nothing but her body is operating like with volition at all. Like, she can't speak, she can't look in the wrong direction. Like, every aspect of her is totally under the goddess's control now at this point. So all she can do is just scream inside of her own brain. And that would be super horrible. We also know that
the real mind-blowing thing is that it should be kind of cathartic, because this is like the tragic, like, that, like, it should be an ironic counterplay, a turnaround. Like, hey, you've just raped 21 again. Like, we've gone back to the beginning. You've raped him yet again. You've exploited, like, you willfully exploited, like, everything bad that's ever happened to him, like, and his worst fears. And now it's your turn. Like, this is, should be like a fucking straight up Tales from the Crypt, like
like last minute twist. How does it feel to be the puppet now? But yeah, her and Lacuna, who's also totally under control, obviously, they meet back up, and then they get like bamfed into the story, because they're off to go kill Little Pip.
Fuck.
They're on their way to go kill the main character of Fall Equestria. Yeehaw! Wee!
Like, I am so thrown by the fact that this is supposed to be like... Like, I get the impression that this is supposed to be like the like... It's supposed to hit you in the guts, because like, she's riding on such a high.
Yes, but the high is so like polluted with gross that this doesn't really work very well.
And like, it is we've, yeah, I, it, we've reached a new level, lads. All right, folks, congratulate, we've hit a new layer of strata. We're deeper down.
I told you. You didn't believe me. No one believes me about this story. I'm the crazy prospect that keeps telling you, no, sonny, it goes down deeper.
There's things down there. Things like you wouldn't believe. Nah.
I'm the, like, I feel like I'm the guy who tries
no,
to...
No, boy! There's deeper darkness still in the world.
I feel like I'm the guy that warns the kids just before they're about to get killed by the killer. Like, I keep telling them.
Yeah, no, you're the old man at the gas station that warns you. Nobody goes into that town.
And after all those kills got exploded. Yeah, God.
Oh, we can handle the darkness, old man. No, not child. You don't understand what darkness is.
Yeah.
There are deeper darknesses in this world than
you could ever fathom. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I keep telling you, like there is more earth to excavate into the deep. But yeah, next week we kill Little Pip. We kill the Batman. I guess we kill the Lightbringer. Whatever. That's next week. But weird. Is there anything we could be reading that would be better than this?
Next wave?
Yes.
Next wave. My brain is just grasping at straws, and there it is. There's a light, and I'm a comic book by oh shit, who is it by? A lunatic, a pair of wackos, got approval to take a bunch of D-list Marvel characters and make a I think it was like 12 issues or something.
Yeah,
there's two
Netflix,
trades.
Next Wave, sorry, not Netflix. Next Wave really encapsulates that energy of like a pair of adults playing with toys and then making a story about it. Like, they're just smashing superhero dolls together and be like, oh, this would be a great story. But like, really fun.
If you like our vision for Rampage, I think Next Wave like embodies the energy that
that pure chaos energy.
Yeah, it's super good. Try and go check it out. It has a theme song.
it has an official
theme song.
It's very good.
You can find it on the internet. Next Wave.
Yeah, I don't really have anything sadly to recommend that I can think of off the top of my brain. Oh, I guess because I'm on the rut of like video games. Scourgebringer is a very, very fun video game if you like roguelikes that are all very high octane action nonsense. It's still in the early access, but I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's got a combo meter very similar to Devil May Cry, which is a super crazy thing to say about a roguelike action shoot platformer.
Oh, cool.
So it's a lot of fun. But yeah, that's the only thing I can really think of off the top of my dome piece, though, that it comes to...
I also noticed that none of you have had the strength, the courage to email us at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Our mailbox remains entirely unchallenged. You have faltered once again. Perhaps you can reclaim your dignity in the coming week.
Yes,
I doubt it.
Other than that, you can also
check
that
is why I retain the champion belt.
God, I forgot about this. But that's how you started this. But you can also find us at Thou Art Fi. My Twitter is extremely not safe for work, so I wouldn't recommend it to anyone that is below the age of 18. Weird has a far more safe for work, but far more political ranty Twitter, which is, what was your Twitter again?
It is now at least 30% like retweets of art tutorials and just random like things that make me happy on my timeline rather than just all the rage about the all the DNC candidates but Bernie admitting on public stage that they'd be completely okay with stealing it in a brokered convention.
Yes.
But yeah, that's Weirdington E. Not ESQ, but just Weirdington E at Twitter, at Weirdington E.
You can also donate to a Weird's Ko-Fi page.
I'd really appreciate it. My pantry is pretty lean.
Yes.
I don't have a whole lot of food.
Weird needs food badly.
Yes. but otherwise, oh man, fine. These last two chapters have definitely been...
And now we're going to go kill Little Pip.
This is all a terrible mistake.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.